It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Behe reporting. Who's invited to the Syrian peace talks? The United Nations Tuesday sent out invitations for the latest international diplomatic effort to end nearly 5 years of conflict in Syria. The talks are to open Friday in Geneva. It's not clear who's been invited. The High Negotiations Committee, representing key opposition groups and factions, contends that it should be the sole opposition delegation. Salem El Meslat is a spokesman who is in Riyadh.
We look really positive, you know, positively to participate. But there are many things, you know, there is a resolution 2254, you know, Article 12 and 13, you know, there are something about humanitarian, you know, issues. This is for us is more important than any political discussion.
The group, which is expected to decide its participation Wednesday, is seeking to end government and Russian airstrikes and lifting of blockades of rebel-held territory. But Syria's most powerful Kurdish party, the Democratic Union Party, or PYD, has said it's not been invited. Russia wants to include the Syrian Kurds. Turkey remains opposed, linking them to Kurdish separatists. In Syria Tuesday, a double suicide bombing in the western city of Homs killed at least 22 and wounded dozens. Islamic State has claimed responsibility. At least three people were injured as police fired tear gas to disperse youths protesting Ebola restrictions that have halted market activity in Sierra Leone's northern Cambia district. The restrictions follow the discovery of at least two cases of the deadly virus in the wake of the death of a 22-year-old woman from Ebola. Sierra Leone was declared Ebola-free earlier this month. This is VOA News. Denmark's parliament has passed controversial new laws aimed at deterring people from seeking asylum there. Danish lawmakers Tuesday overwhelmingly passed the so-called jewelry bill, allowing authorities to seize asylum seekers' property to help pay for their stay. Another measure would add to the delay for family reunification. Adrian Edwards is with the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Refugees.
It runs the risk of fueling sentiments of fear and discrimination rather than promoting solidarity with people in need of protection. On the limited access to family reunification, we just remind people of the point that family unity is a fundamental principle in international law, and it's very much part of Denmark's obligations.
The Scandinavian country took in a record 220,000 asylum seekers last year. Meanwhile, the European Union is considering allowing member states in the passport-free Schengen zone to reintroduce border checks for up to 2 years as a way to control the flow of migrants and refugees. A UN panel is asking the Security Council to set up an inquiry into alleged violations of international law by all sides in Yemen. The experts say the Saudi-led coalition carried out airstrikes on Houthi rebels, launching over 100 sorties that may have broken humanitarian laws. They say more than 80% of the population is also in dire need of food and medical care. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry in Beijing is expected to urge China to do more to press North Korea to stop its controversial nuclear testing. He'll hold talks with China's President Xi Jinping and Foreign Minister Wang Yi. Ankit Panda, editor of the Diplomat publication, says he sees little prospect for success.
Overall, there is simply no common understanding between the United States and China on the right way to approach the North Korean issue. And nothing really changed with the nuclear test, unfortunately, in that regard. The United States continues to insist that North Korea has to make some sort of bona fide gesture of denuclearization before it will consider returning to negotiations. And China continues to push for restraint and a return to the six-party talks process.
He says actions like an oil embargo of its ally and a ban on civilian flights would only cause economic hardship for Pyongyang. South Sudanese rebel leader Riek Machar, speaking in Kampala Tuesday, said he won't return to his country because the government of President Salva Kiir has violated last year's peace accord. Machar says the government's decision to create 28 new states from the original 10 violates the August peace agreement. An Al-Qaeda-linked jihadist group is suspected of having kidnapped a Swiss nun in northern Mali. According to Site Intelligence Group, a video released by the group Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb claimed to have abducted Beatrice Stockley 3 weeks ago. She was based in Timbuktu. In the video, the group demands release of members held by the Malian government and one by the International Criminal Court. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today's Wednesday, January 27th, and here are some of the stories we're covering. The trial of former Ivory Coast President Laurent Gbagbo finally opens tomorrow at the ICC.
C'est une prise d'otage qui dit pas son nom.
Party official Aboubakar Kone says Gbagbo's detention at the International Criminal Court is a hostage-taking situation that does not say his name.
That's VOA correspondent Emily Yop in Abidjan. Tanzania's opposition coalition UKAWA is set to announce its position tomorrow on the impasse over last October's election in Zanzibar. And South Sudan's government says a UN panel's recommendation of sanctions against President Salva Kiir is aimed at regime change.
If they are talking of sanctioning, indicting the president, indicting Riek Machar, and so forth, then definitely this is a very clear plan for a regime change. So we are quite aware about that, and we'll see how far will it succeed.
Michael Makuei is South Sudan's information minister. Meanwhile, rebel leader Riek Machar continues his peace mission tomorrow at the African Union. Zimbabwe authorities accused four men of plotting to bomb President Robert Mugabe's dairy farm, and the UN appeals for funds to educate children in conflict areas. Those stories, plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The trial of former Ivory Coast President Laurent Gbagbo is set to begin tomorrow, Thursday, at the International Criminal Court, the ICC. Mr. Gbagbo is facing charges of crimes against humanity based on acts he allegedly committed during Ivory Coast post-election violence in 2010 and 2011. His lawyers said the charges are politically motivated. Emily Yob spoke to Gbagbo's supporters in Ivory Coast, who say they plan to closely follow the trial, which many of them perceive as an insult.
In the hall of his party's new office in Abidjan, giant posters of former Ivorian President Laurent Gbagbo are plastered on almost every wall.
C'est une prise d'otage qui dit pas son nom.
Party official Aboubakar Kone says Gbagbo's detention at the International Criminal Court is a hostage-taking situation that does not say his name. Kone is acting spokesperson of a faction of Gbagbo's former party, the Ivorian Popular Front, or FPI. The party broke into two factions last year before the presidential elections. Kone was among those who linked the party's participation in the vote to Gbagbo's release from the ICC. That did not happen, so that faction boycotted the election. A few days ago, Kone called for Gbagbo supporters to pressure the ICC to release the former president, claiming his detention is the result of a conspiracy.
La CPI aujourd'hui est regardée par l'ensemble des Africains comme un instrument de.
The ICC is perceived by a lot of Africans as a tool for neo-colonial domination, he says. It is not about justice, it is about politics, he adds. Gbagbo and his former ally Charles Begoude are charged with four counts of crimes against humanity for violence that occurred in the month after the 2010 presidential elections. Gbagbo supporters clashed with backers of challenger Alassane Ouattara after both men claimed victory, although international elections monitors said Ouattara had won. The violence left about 3,000 people dead and ended in April 2011 with the arrest of Gbagbo. Ouattara was then installed as president and was re-elected last year. Kone says the defense will show the innocence of Gbagbo and Begoude.
En regardant toutes les vidéos, en écoutant toutes les bandes sonores, personne ne peut prouver.
If you watch all the video and listen to all the tapes, Kone says, nobody can prove that either of them is soliciting any violence, he says. But ICC prosecutors argue otherwise and intend to present several thousand documents aimed at proving Gbagbo and his ally organized a plan to remain in power by all means necessary, including violence against civilians. While Kone said the faction has sent a delegation to The Hague to follow the trial from the courtroom, other supporters will be following the trial from Abidjan, like Oku Thiero, the president of a pro-Gbagbo youth forum. Thiero says he has no doubt Gbagbo is innocent and will be released. According to him, that will help national unity.
C'est le nœud de la réconciliation.
It is the missing link to the reconciliation, he says. In other parts of the country, too, Gbagbo supporters will be watching, like in Ganyoa, a Gbagbo stronghold. We have planned to hold a vigil, said Leandre Gikagyokri, acting spokesperson of the local FPI office. Then on Thursday morning, we will sit in front of the TV to watch it. Laurent Gbagbo is the first former head of state to go on trial at the ICC. Emilia from VOA News in Abidjan.
Tanzania's opposition coalition, UKAWA, is set to announce its position tomorrow, Thursday, on the impasse over last October's election in Zanzibar. The electoral commission there annulled the polls on grounds they were marred by several irregularities. But the opposition said the commission cancelled the vote because its candidate won. The commission announced last week that fresh elections will be held on March 20th. Freeman Mbowe is national chairman of the opposition Chadema Party and co-chair of UKAWA. He says the Zanzibar Electoral Commission should announce the legitimate winner of last October's election instead of having another election.
As you would know, the Zanzibar Electoral Commission has said the elections in Zanzibar that were wrongly nullified after the elections that was held on 25th of October last year. Now, the Zanzibar Electoral Commission has decided to announce that the elections will be rerun sometimes in March. And we think there's no point of rerunning the election because the action or the act to nullify the election in Zanzibar was wrong, was malice, and definitely we are not in a position to accept to participate in the announced election. Instead, we are asking for the authorities to announce the legitimate winner of the Zanzibar election.
As you mentioned, your candidate has been meeting to find kind of a non-violent solution. So should the people of Tanzania and Zanzibar expect that out of Thursday's meeting, there's going to be an agreement to say, yes, we are going to participate or we are not going to participate?
I don't want to say what will be the results of the meeting, but certainly CUF party meeting will give a position on what should be the way forward for Zanzibar politics. All along, we have been insisting on peace and tranquility in Zanzibar because we thought our counterparts in the ruling party and in the government would be reasonable enough to ensure that justice is delivered and the rightful winner of the Zanzibar election is announced. But today is like exactly 3 months and 1 day since the election was held in Zanzibar.
Your group is hoping that the rightful winner of that election in Zanzibar should be announced, meaning your candidate, is that correct?
Correct, yes.
The Zanzibar Electoral Commission, I mean, as you mentioned, nullified the October election because they said there were too many irregularities.
Yes, this is according to the Zanzibar Electoral Commission, but they've never come out with the exact irregularities that they are claiming to have taken place. There was not any claim that was registered in any polling station, in any constituency in Zanzibar. But everybody surprised, the chairman of the Electoral Commission came out and said there are too many irregularities. So what we are trying to say now is the Governing Council is going to meet tomorrow. After the Governing Council meeting tomorrow, they will come out with a clear position on how we should treat the political stalemate in Zanzibar. And now the UKAWA coalition will deliberate on the way forward in relation to this political stalemate in Zanzibar.
Freeman Mbowe is national chairman of the opposition Chadema Party of Tanzania and co-chair of UKAWA Coalition. He was speaking with me from Dar es Salaam. The United Nations has released the final report of a panel of experts on South Sudan, which calls for a comprehensive arms embargo on the country. The report also calls for sanctioning high-level decision-makers in South Sudan's leadership, including President Salva Kiir and opposition leader Riek Machar. It says the two leaders are responsible for human rights abuses associated with the civil war. Nabil Biagio of VOA South Sudan in Focus program reports from Juba.
The 51-page report, written late last year and authored by five experts appointed by a UN resolution in March, says President Kiir and a narrow circle of senior officials in the military and national security are waging an aggressive war that involves the targeting of civilians and extensive destruction of communities. It also accuses the leaders of both sides, including armed opposition leader Riek Machar, of continuing to buy arms and carry on the war in order to further their own personal political ambitions at the expense of peace. The report calls for an arms embargo in South Sudan and the sanctioning of high-level individuals in both government and opposition, which would likely include the president and Machar. South Sudan government spokesman Michael Makwey says the government is still reading the report and has no official response as yet.
We have just received the report and we will respond to it. We are required to respond to it and we will respond to it. However, the report was received late. It was written 10 days ago, but we received it today.
Makwe says he was not surprised by the UN experts' recommendations to sanction Mr. Kiir. He says the government will continue to be targeted by the United Nations.
It is not strange for anybody to recommend like that, because their target and their main objective is the regime change, and they have not changed it. So whatever is done must be done geared towards that direction.
Makwe says the report reveals a conspiracy against the government of South Sudan.
If they are talking of sanctioning, indicting the president, indicting Riek Machar, and so forth, then definitely this is a very clear plan for a regime change. So we are quite aware about that, and we'll see how far will it succeed.
The authors of the report say they have strong evidence that both sides committed human rights abuses, including sexual violence, and used children as soldiers. The United Nations, the United States, and other Western partners have already issued sanctions against five military commanders on both sides of the conflict, seen as obstructing the peace agreement. Three of the five UN-sanctioned individuals are affiliated with Mr. Machar's opposition. The other two are on the side of the government. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
Today's Wednesday, January 27th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Then please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 16 and a half minutes past the hour. South Sudan rebel leader Riek Machar and first vice president designate in a soon-to-be-formed national unity government takes his campaign against President Salva Kiir's creation of 28 states to the African Union tomorrow, Thursday. Mr. Machar returned from Kampala yesterday, where he urged Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni to tell President Salva Kiir to scrap his 28 states decision because it is hindering implementation of the peace agreement. Ezekiel Logakov is the Secretary for Foreign Affairs of the SPLM in opposition. He says Mr. Machar wants to start a new chapter of peace and friendship with President Museveni.
If you recall, when the war broke out in 2013, December, President Museveni sided with President Salva by supporting President Salva on the war and even sending his troops to South Sudan, because he was misinformed that Dr. Riek Machar and myself, we made a coup against the government of Salva Kiir. So that one, he realized that there was no coup. He constructively played an important role in making sure that peace is realized in South Sudan. And also now we went to him to open a new page to continue to constructively play his important role in implementation of the agreement. We also discussed full implementation of the agreement and the violations that are being carried out by President Salva Kiir, especially the creation of 28 states.
Your leader, Dr. Machar, has been quoted in the local papers saying that he wants to start a new chapter of peace and friendship. What chapter of peace?
Well, you know, if it is not because of President Museveni, Salva Kiir would have not signed the agreement. Because if you recall, Salva signed the agreement 9 days later after when Dr. Riek signed the agreement in Addis Ababa. So President Museveni is one of the guarantors of the peace agreement. After the agreement, he has withdrawn his forces from South Sudan. They are only in Western Equatoria, which means that they will be there to fight the LRA. So definitely there is a new place to be opened and there is a new relation to be forged.
You are back in Addis Ababa, where an African Union summit is taking place tomorrow, Thursday. So can we say that your group is on a diplomatic kind of blitzkrieg where you are trying to do what?
Well, we wanted to make sure that the peace is implemented, is not going to fall apart. We will be engaging with many leaders in Africa, especially the guarantors of the peace agreement. So most of the key guarantors of the peace agreement will be in the AU summit, and we will be engaging them to make sure that, one, 28 states is revoked. They pressure Salva to revoke it because the agreement is talking about 10 states only, not 28 states.
Ezekiel, the United Nations panel of experts is recommending that your leader, Riek Machar, and South Sudan President Salva Kiir, that the United Nations should impose sanctions on the two leaders because the experts believe that the two leaders have been solely responsible for the violence.
You definitely need to know that when the war started, Dr. Riek was running for his life. He was almost killed, more than 11 ambushes on the way. Myself, I was captured and arrested, taken to court and tried, accused of making a coup. But at the end, the court of Salva Kiir acquitted us, declaring that there was no coup. So Dr. Machar, he has no role in instigating this violence. He was actually running for his life.
Ezekiel Gatkov is the Secretary for Foreign Affairs of the SPLM in opposition. He was speaking with me from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Authorities in Zimbabwe are holding four men, including two army officers and an opposition leader, on charges they plotted to bomb a dairy farm owned by President Robert Mugabe. Sebastian Mofu reports for VOA from Harare.
On Tuesday, police refused to comment on the four, saying they are facing charges of, quote, possession of weaponry for sabotage and money laundering for terrorism purposes, unquote. According to court records, when the four men aged between 29 and 37 years old were arrested, petrol bombs and alcohol, among other things, were found Friday at Mugabe's farm about 30 kilometers north of Harare. Police said the suspects confessed to planning to bomb the president's dairy farm. Takura Jangaja is an independent political commentator in Zimbabwe.
In terms of the general political narrative in Zimbabwe, usually there are such cases that emerge every now and then, and a lot of trials that emerge around allegations of treason as well as undermining the authority of government. What might be surprising is its origins as well as the areas in which it is alleged to have occurred, close to the first family's residence or business properties.
That was an apparent reference to the fact that in Zimbabwe, all first families' residences, businesses and properties have 24-hour security. There was no word on why the men wanted to attack the president's farm. Mugabe supporters seized hundreds of farms from white owners in the early 2000s under what the government called a land reform program to address colonial-era imbalances. The four suspects, who allegedly held several meetings to raise money and plan the bomb attempt, are scheduled to appear in court on February 8. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
The United Nations Children's Fund is appealing for $2.8 billion to protect and assist some 43 million children around the world that are caught up in humanitarian emergencies, including conflict, epidemics, and climate change. Lisa Schneier reports for VOA from Geneva.
This year's appeal from UNICEF is slightly lower than last year's, when the Ebola epidemic in West Africa required a sizable chunk of the money designated for humanitarian emergencies around the world. For the first time ever, UNICEF says the largest portion of the appeal, 25%, is going toward educating children in emergencies. The agency says it plans to provide education for more than 8 million children this year. 5 million of them will be Syrian children inside the country or living as refugees in countries nearby. The UNICEF representative in Syria, Hannah Singer, knows the toll war takes on children. She calls Syria the most dangerous place on earth to be a child. Many are killed and wounded from the fighting, and many others die because medical care is lacking. Singer, however, says the impact of the war on education, which she calls a life-saving measure, is staggering. She says 2 million Syrian children are out of school. 1 in 4 schools can no longer be used. And she says the educational sector has lost 50,000 teachers because they were killed or forced to flee the country.
For a country that, before the conflict, education enrollment or school enrollment was over 90%, Syria has now lost 2 decades of educational progress. This is a real risk. There is a real risk that a whole generation of children will be lost.
The funding in this UNICEF appeal will also assist children suffering from severe food shortages, violence, disease, and abuse. The UN agency says climate change is a growing threat, with hundreds of millions of children living in areas prone to heavy flooding or severe drought. UNICEF's Director of Emergency Programs, Afshan Khan, tells VOA that children in Africa's Sahel region are particularly vulnerable.
There is a negative impact on everyone, but primarily on children. It goes beyond the visuals of it. It's nutrition, it's safe water, it's very many other things that come with it. Livelihoods are affected, so child poverty sets in, child labor comes in, exploitation, trafficking, movement of population.
Other programs aim to assist children in politically volatile Burundi and countries around the Lake Chad region beset by conflict, food, and water shortages. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Tunisia went on the rampage, beating Niger 5-0 in the Nyamirambo Stadium at the Orange African Nations Championships in Kigali, Rwanda, on Tuesday. Guinea pipped Nigeria 1-0 at the Umganda Stadium in Gishenyi, some 160 kilometers northwest of Kigali. Tunisia and Guinea advance from Group C to the quarterfinals. Today, Wednesday, Group D action concludes with Uganda playing Zimbabwe at the Umganda Stadium as Zambia face Mali at the Nyamirambo Stadium. Zambia lead the group with 6 points. Mali have 4. Uganda 1, while Zimbabwe have no point. In handball, defending champions Algeria beat Nigeria 31-23. Cameroon edged Gabon 25-22 and hosts Egypt dismissed Morocco 31-13 in Group A action at the Africa Men's Handball Championship in Cairo on Tuesday. In Group B, Republic of Congo and Libya drew 21-0. Tunisia pipped Angola 23-21 as the Democratic Republic of Congo outplayed Kenya 35-30. Today, Wednesday, in the quarterfinals, Egypt play the Republic of Congo. Angola face Morocco. Algeria tackle the Democratic Republic of Congo. And Tunisia encounter Cameroon. While in classification matches, Nigeria play Kenya as Libya engage Gabon. In basketball, Angola, Senegal, and Tunisia get another chance to qualify for the men's basketball at the Rio de Janeiro Olympics following the draws for the 18-nation qualifying contest conducted at the World Basketball Governing Body's headquarters, FIBA, in Mies, Switzerland, on Tuesday. Angola is drawn with the Czech Republic, Japan, Latvia, Puerto Rico, and hosts Serbia in Belgrade. Senegal will campaign against Canada, France, New Zealand, Turkey, and hosts Philippines in Manila, while Tunisia face Croatia, Greece, Iran, Mexico, and hosts Italy in Turin. The contest runs at all three venues simultaneously from the 4th to the 10th of July. The draws for the women's qualifiers were conducted last week. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The top Central African Republic court has annulled last month's legislative elections, but confirmed that two former prime ministers will face off for the presidency. The Constitutional Court ruled late Monday that the first round legislative vote on December 30th was marred by numerous irregularities and said some candidates appear to be involved. The court day gave the green light for a presidential runoff election between the top first-round vote-getters. That's it for this Wednesday, January 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte here to remind you that February is Black History Month in the United States. And starting Monday, February 1st, we will begin our Black History Month series and daily quiz on Daybreak Africa. Listen every morning as we profile historical African-American and African individuals and events. You can win special VOA goodies by answering one of our daily Black History questions. Please send your answers to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. You can also call us on 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, select the number 25 to leave us your answer. Get up.